Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is January the 8th, 2016. Final year for this Obama administration. Thank God. So happy that you could join me. Great to be back with you at the beginning of the new year, or sort of the beginning of the new year. I took the past 2 weeks off just to recharge my battery and try to catch up with all the crazy stuff that has been going on, and I can assure you there is no shortage of crazy stuff. So here we are, new year, much to catch up on. But to begin with, for those of you not familiar with me or the program, I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. I spent half my 30-year career with the Drug Task Force. I was assigned to DEA Intelligence. I had a desk up at the FBI, ATF. I've worked with foreign governments in a very true sense. I took the scenic tour where immigration is concerned and came away with an understanding of immigration that few people have the opportunity to acquire. So I consider myself very fortunate. And the purpose of this program is to provide you with the information that I've gained, the experiences that I've had, to make sense of where we are, where we need to be, and how the failures of the immigration system are impacting America and Americans, and how we can fix it. Because this is a solvable problem if and only if we really have leaders who want to solve the problem. Pardon me. And if someone says to you, well, there's too many illegal aliens in the United States to deport them all, so we need to give them all lawful status, run for your life, because that is one of the worst arguments I've ever heard. No law gets enforced more than a fraction of 1%, whether it's the speed laws, whether it's tax law. You know, we don't do 100% enforcement. The only laws that are enforced 100% of the time are the laws of nature, because they are immutable. They don't depend on agents, people with guns or handcuffs or judges. Nature's laws are immutable. They are followed not because human beings intervene, but because they are the foundation of the universe. Pardon me. And so when we deal with man's laws, people's laws, if you will, I don't want to be accused of sexism here, it depends on human beings to enforce the law. And if we don't enforce the law, then they become irrelevant. I don't care what laws are on the books. Without enforcement, laws do not matter. And that has been the game that both political parties have been playing on the American people for far too long, and we are paying one hell of a price because of it. You know, I've been writing about this for many years. I've done a bunch of congressional hearings on these issues. The websites I would very much love for you to go visit, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Also, for many years, I have been a senior fellow with a terrific organization out in California, Californians for Population Stabilization. And although it's about California, it's really about America. Because the way that California goes is the way the rest of America goes. And right now, California is going down the drain. Let's be blunt. And this isn't a left-right issue. This is a right-wrong issue. And it's not about being anti-immigrant, but about being pro-enforcement. And so California is suffering tremendously because the politicians in California are unwilling to enforce the law because they have an agenda. They're looking to placate the people that write those campaign contributions. They're looking for votes. They're looking for money. It's a corruption on a scale that should have been and would have been unfathomable just a couple of decades ago. So when you think about Californians for Population Stabilization, I'd love for you to go to their website. capsweb.org. I actually have my latest article up on the website. They posted it yesterday. Yesterday, of course, being January the 7th. And the title of it is Funding Catastrophe, Congress Approves Omnibus Spending Bill. I actually wrote that commentary a couple of weeks ago, but with the holiday rush and everything going on, it just finally got posted, and these things sometimes happen, but it's no less relevant today than on the day that I wrote it, because they voted for the omnibus spending bill back on December 18th, just a couple of weeks ago. And the impact is horrific. For all the screaming and yelling and ranting and raving and thumping of the podiums that we've seen by the politicians from both sides of the aisle, but especially the Republicans, let's face it, they funded the ability to bring refugees into the United States from Syria. They refused to defund sanctuary cities. The measures that are contained in the omnibus bill basically gave the Obama administration everything he wanted with a bow around it. This is nuts. And by the way, I'm registered as a Democrat. I am not being partisan. But this administration has made a shambles of our immigration laws, and those laws are our first and last line of defense against international terrorists, against transnational criminals, against aliens who would take the jobs of Americans, whether by working legally or illegally. And under this administration, there's precious little difference. They have given hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens, the Dreamers, lawful status without an interview, without a field investigation. They could be as old as 31 years of age, and most people don't realize it. They keep thinking, oh, children, you know, 12 years old. No, the cutoff is 31. And if you want to look at the average terrorist who commits a crime of violence, or I won't even call it a crime, a terrorist action isn't a crime. It's the action of an enemy. And most of those who do those violent acts are under the age of 30. This is lunacy. This is lunacy. And so when you have the Republicans thumping the podium and saying, boy, that president, oh, he's wrong, and then they sign off, they approve the omnibus spending bill, which gave the Obama administration everything they wanted, folks, this is kabuki theater. This is a betrayal. This is not looking out for America or Americans. You know, I was in South Carolina recently, twice, to talk about the refugee resettlement program, and now the headlines have been blaring for the past day or so. Two refugees, one in California, one in Texas, arrested for involvement in terrorism. They came here within the last 5 years or so. Legally, we admitted them. One guy had residency, the other was a refugee. And they lied about their involvement with ISIS and about their travel and so forth. And they are one of hundreds of thousands of people in our country who may well have an involvement in the Middle East with ISIS, with other terrorist organizations, and we are flying blind in a storm. Willfully blind, because this administration puts politics ahead of America's national security and the lives of our citizens. And I've been writing about this for my own website, michaelcutler.net, for capsweb.org, for Front Page Magazine, for The Social Contract. In the past, I've written articles for Progressives for Immigration Reform, The Daily Caller. You need to understand what this betrayal really means. This isn't a philosophical debate. We're not discussing how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. I wish it was as insignificant as that and as esoteric as that, but it's not. It's not. And I have to tell you that my anger was off the scale when I saw the president with those crocodile tears of his crying about the children being shot to death in places like Chicago. This is a president who has turned tens of thousands of violent criminal aliens loose on communities across the country. This is the president who was involved with Operation Fast and Furious, lest we forget all those guns that were given over to the Mexican cartels. This is the president who refuses to enforce the immigration laws. And then you have Sarah Saldana, the head of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, testifying before Congress, before a Senate hearing, and it blew me away, I have to tell you. I watched a video clip and I read what she said, and it left me with my head spinning like a gyroscope. She actually said that she had returned to the Congress $113 million in funding that should have been used to effect the removal, the deportation, if you will, of aliens illegally present in the United States, saying she couldn't find any worth deporting, even though by her own estimate she now believes that that 11 million figure is bogus. She thinks it's maybe 15 million. I still insist it's at least 30 and maybe 40 million. So here you have Saldana, the head of ICE, saying, yeah, we got 15 million illegal aliens in the country, but I just couldn't find anybody worth deporting, so here's your money, take it back. Now, I want you to remember that it was in 2013 when we had the sequestration of the funding because of the budget battle that the president said that because the funding was not available, he had no choice but to turn criminal aliens loose. Now they have the money, and they return it without spending it. The agenda of this administration is that no matter what happens, there will be no meaningful enforcement of the immigration laws of the United States of America. We have basically dismantled our border. We have taken the front door off the hinges. We've taken the back door off the hinges. We've opened the windows and turned off the burglar alarm, and we are now a sitting duck. Why? Only Mr. Obama can answer those questions. I won't even begin to speculate. But my anger is in the stratosphere. How many Americans have died because of sanctuary cities? He doesn't want bad guys to get guns. Well, you know what, folks? I don't either. And as an agent, I had the privilege of working with law enforcement on the federal level, on the state level, on the local level, and with other governments. I worked with the government of Japan and Canada, Great Britain, and I spent many years working closely with the Israeli National Police. We all wanted the same things, to get the guns away from the criminals. I have no issue with keeping guns away from criminals, but that's not what this is about. You know, I don't know why our brilliant politicians, you know, the ones who flunked the wiggle test. And by the way, if you don't know what the wiggle test is, you stick your left finger in your left ear, you stick your right finger in your right ear, you wiggle your fingertips. If they touch, you flunk. That's probably three quarters of the mayors and governors out there, the ones who favor sanctuary cities approach to illegal aliens. No gun zones around the schools. I want to know how many times people walking down the block who were intent on committing a crime saw a sign saying, this is a non-gun zone, and they turn around and ran home, or they threw their guns into the garbage can. Does anyone believe that the criminals, the terrorists, the crazy people are paying attention to that? I'll tell you who's paying attention to no gun zones. Anybody who would want to do a mass murder of school children. We saw it in Beslan in Russia. We've seen it at Sandy Hook. We've seen it elsewhere. It's terrible. It's terrible. Children are our most precious people. We always want to protect the children before we protect anybody else. I can tell you as an agent, we've done raids. We would always put ourselves between the children in an apartment and the guy with the guns that we were arresting. The last thing anybody ever wants to see happen is to have any child injured, let alone, God forbid, killed. Okay? So I'm all for getting the guns away from the bad guys. But when you tell potential terrorists that if they go near the schools, there'll be no one there to confront them with weapons, and they have the gun, they're in control. Why on earth would you do that? This makes no sense whatsoever. You know, I'm a great believer in carrying firearms. Although I'm a Democrat, I'm a very strong proponent of the Second Amendment. I always believe that you should never let anybody know that you're carrying or where you're carrying it, because you have the element of surprise. You know, some guy wants to mug somebody and he sees some little old guy bopping down the block and he thinks, oh, that guy's easy. And the next thing he knows, the guy has a gun and he can defend himself. Or if it's a little old lady, she can defend herself. Or whatever. We have the right to defend ourselves. The Second Amendment is so clear on this. The Supreme Court has upheld this. There's no argument here. If you're a law-abiding citizen, you should be able, if you so desire, to have a firearm to protect yourself. You know, the old saying that when seconds count, police are minutes away. So I believe that, you know, they have open carry now in Texas. I prefer concealed carry. We let the bad guy know you got a gun. Surprise, surprise, you know. But it's the same thing with the schools. There is no surprise. We've told terrorists that, God forbid, if one day one of these wackaloons wants to go out there, that if they go to a school, the likelihood is nobody will have a gun to defend themselves against these wackaloon pieces of trash. Why don't we have signs that say no terrorist zone? So maybe that will keep the terrorists away, just like the no gun zones. I mean, this is flawed reasoning. Flawed reasoning. We as Americans are being held captive to politicians who do not take their oaths of office seriously, who perhaps are incapable of reasoning, of thinking logically, rationally. We're going to pass the law, you know, no gun zone. So make it a no terrorist zone. If you think that the sign is going to make a difference, I'd like to know why those signs, no terrorist zones, haven't been posted. Because everybody knows it's stupid. It's ridiculous. It's an absurdity. And the president has the chutzpah to talk about the children that are being gunned down by the weapons. Well, why doesn't he look at the gangs? And yes, not all gang members are foreign-born, but many of them are. And I can tell you, as an immigration agent, I investigated MS-13. I investigated other gangs, drug posses from the Caribbean, from Jamaica, from Trinidad. These folks are very violent. When you grow up in third-world countries and you're exposed to that level of violence, that level of poverty, the rules are very different. And so we have imported gang members into America. And if you don't believe me, here's something for you to think about. I always tell people that the best metric about border security has nothing to do with those fantasy arrest statistics of the administration. There isn't a statistic that this administration is willing to put out there that I believe has a gram of truth to it. It's all propaganda, and it's not political correctness, folks. It's Orwellian. This is done in a calculated manner to mislead the American people. This is all a political calculus, and both sides of the aisle are guilty of it. They play politics, and Americans are dying, and Americans are losing their jobs, and our children are losing their thin grasp on their share of the American dream that should be their birthright. But it's all bull. If you want to know how secure the border is, look at the price and availability of heroin and cocaine. I've said it before. I'm saying it again tonight. The price of heroin, the availability of heroin, is the clear barometer. We do not produce a single molecule of heroin inside the United States. Every gram of heroin present in the United States provides graphic evidence of a failure of border security. And it's not just coming across the Mexican border. That rat poison is coming in at international airports. It's coming in through seaports. It's coming across the Canadian border. We are a nation with many holes in it. You know, I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine. I called it Border Security and the Immigration Colander. We have 328 ports of entry. We have about 1,900 miles of border that's supposed to separate the United States from Mexico, and it's nothing more than a speed bump. But we also have more than 5,000 miles of border with Canada. And ladies and gentlemen, we have 95,000 miles of coastline. 95,000 miles of coastline. There is no way that you can ever completely prevent aliens from entering the country whose presence is dangerous to us. And so I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine back on December the 20th, I believe, is when it was published. And the upshot of the article was that the solution to the failures of the immigration system is interior enforcement. Enforce the immigration laws from within the interior. And going back as far as the Reagan administration, that has never been the policy, never been the priority. We're going to secure the Mexican border. If I hear one more politician put everything on the Mexican border, once the Mexican border is secure. Okay, so they're talking about partially plugging one hole in the bottom of a colander and telling it is now suitable for use as a bucket. How stupid is that? Almost 40% of the illegal, almost 50% of the illegal aliens, 40% or more, did not run our borders but came through ports of entry and then violated the terms of their admission. And now you have a president that says, well, when you violate the terms of admission and when you're being set up for a hearing to see an immigration judge, we'll give you employment authorization because, after all, we have such a surplus of workers in America, right? The 94 million Americans who've left the labor force, we have a surplus of jobs? You would think we did. Because this president, backed up by the Republicans for all the screaming they did, they fund the omnibus bill. I'm going to keep repeating it. Don't listen to a word that they say. Look to see whether or not they voted for the omnibus bill. That's the metric. That's the metric. My mom used to tell me actions speak louder than words. The words are cheap. Talk is cheap, as my parents told me as a kid. Do they support the omnibus bill? If they did, they are in favor of the president. They are voting with the president. They are supporting the president's actions. It's very simple. It's extremely easy. It's very simple to figure this one out. This is a no-brainer. They are funding what the president wanted to accomplish, flood America with ever more foreign workers. And by the way, the added bonus for America, if you want to call it that, if you don't like this country, is that the more foreign workers who come here, the more money that they send out of our economy and loot the American economy and jack up our deficit. It's nuts. If you go to the UN website or you go to the World Bank website, they have made it perfectly clear that they expect that if we passed any kind of comprehensive immigration reform bill and that took care of all these workers who are here, the amount of money that would be shipped out of the United States to the third world would skyrocket. And they're cheering it on. You see, their attitude towards America is, imagine that there is looting, there's a riot, and the looters are out there, and they're carrying off the big screen TVs and the laptops and the cell phones. And imagine the reporter saying, how wonderful is it that poor people now have nice new televisions? How wonderful is it that America is going to bleed all of its money to the third world? That's what this massive influx in foreign workers is doing. It is driving down wages. It is putting hardworking Americans who, through no fault of their own, have lost their jobs, lost their careers, lost their livelihoods, their ability to support their families, have lost their homes. They're being replaced by foreign workers. The work Americans won't do. Okay, let's see. Computer programmers, biochemical engineers, technicians, construction workers. You can't name a job that's not being done. And colleges are even hiring H-1B visa holders as instructors. We can't even teach anymore. You know, they you can't do, they you can't teach. Well, if they think we can't do, we can't even teach anymore because universities increasingly want H-1B visa holders to come in and become the instructors on universities. And, of course, they're going to teach the wonders of American exceptionalism. I could just imagine it now. We are in the midst of disassembling the United States of America, ladies and gentlemen. It's nothing short of that. And so the president stands there with his crocodile tears. I spoke to a good friend whose son was killed by an alien who should not have been here, who had no driver's license, whose car was returned to him by the San Francisco Police Department, because you know what they think about American lives. We saw what happened to Kate Steinle. Believe me, she's not the only one. This man's 25-year-old son was killed at the hands, or the wheel, if you will, of an alien who was driving without a license and shouldn't have been here, my friend Don Rosenberg. And we had this conversation. I didn't see Mr. Obama shed a single tear over Don's son. I don't see him shedding any tears about people being killed by the violent gangs in Chicago. And the LAPD folks put out a statement, and they said, I believe it was 80% of the homicides in Los Angeles were gang-related. 80%. Drugs, gangs, and guns all go together. Okay? They all mesh together. Drug violence, gang violence. What has the president done to go after the gangs? The drugs are pouring into the country. The drugs fund terrorism, and the drugs fund gangs. And we've never had more heroin flowing through the streets of our cities than today. And how do we know? Because the demand has never been higher and the price has never been lower. And classic economics say that when the demand for a commodity goes up, the price goes up. You know, lots of people want it. It drives the price up. There's only one way that you could have a huge demand and the price can continue to fall, and that's if you essentially have an unlimited supply. Today, there is an unlimited supply of heroin flowing through the United States. Unlimited. Pardon me. And it comes into this country from outside the United States. That's all you need to know about border security. But meanwhile, the president wants to release nonviolent drug offenders. There's no disincentive against the use of drugs. There's no stigma attached to it now. This is a country in a state of free fall. And our kids are paying the price. Our grandchildren will pay the price if we don't turn things around. You can't protect the citizens of our country with an open border, with millions of people in our country whose identities can't be verified. And then they had this video, and I just reissued or sent out an email about an article I wrote about educating jihadis at our universities. I don't know if you saw it, but this past week, a video was leaked to Sky News purportedly showing how the ISIS terrorists had established their own training centers, their high-tech engineering centers, and what they're doing is ingenious. I guess they can't find enough suicide bombers, so they figured out a way to remotely control a car. And they anticipate that our soldiers will use thermal scanning to determine whether or not there's anybody behind the wheel of the car. So they are putting mannequins in the cars. They are heating the mannequins with electricity so that they hit approximately normal body temperature, 98.6 degrees. So if you scan the vehicle, it appears there's a driver behind the wheel. And if you check the thermal image, the driver is the approximately the right temperature. So it's not just a mannequin in the car, but a mannequin who produces enough heat that on that thermoscan it will look human. So nobody knows that this is really a driverless car with a mannequin until it gets on top of its intended victims, and then they hit the button and bang, they kill a bunch of innocent people. They kill a bunch of soldiers. They kill a bunch of law enforcement officers. So here's my question. Where did these terrorists get the training? We've seen it before. We are educating terrorists in our universities unwittingly. But we're told we have to bring in the world to study at our schools. Why? Because the university presidents make gazillions of dollars. Many of them make more than the president of the United States. They're treated like royalty. And everybody wants their cut of the apple. Everyone wants their piece of flesh. And no one gives a good damn about what this will ultimately do to this country or to the American people, because they don't care. We are speed bumps, if that much, in their quest for wealth and power. We are collateral damage. You know, I wrote an article for Caps Web not that long ago where I wrote about collateral damage. And if you look at how much money the U.S. military spends on smart weaponry, why? So that we don't have to blow up an entire neighborhood to take out the building with the bad guys. We can actually guide one of our cruise missiles, you've seen the videos, through a particular window on a particular floor of a specific building and just wipe out that one part of that one building rather than saturate an entire area with carpet bombs. Why? to minimize collateral damage, civilian casualties. I wish that Mr. Obama and the mayors of sanctuary cities were as concerned about collateral damage as our military is when they wage war in the Middle East or elsewhere. Nobody who favors sanctuary cities a rat's tail about the death of Americans or members of the ethnic immigrant communities. And let's remember, it's generally the members of those ethnic immigrant communities who suffer the greatest casualties. And in fact, when I was speaking with Don, he told me that there had been a survey done. And Latinos, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I can assure you way over half of all Latinos were against sanctuary cities. American blacks, I think it was 70-something percent opposed to it, and American whites, I believe, was in excess of 80% opposed to sanctuary cities. If this is supposed to be representative government, who the hell are they representing? And again, we come back to the lie about the Latino vote, which is insulting American Latinos. We have everybody convinced that anybody whose last name is, you know, Garcia or Rodriguez or Sanchez is an illegal alien and lawless. And we have millions upon millions of Americans of Latino descent who might be fifth generation American. Perhaps their grandfather died at Iwo Jima and their father may have died in Vietnam and they may just be returning from their third tour in Afghanistan. But the lies by these pundits, by the pollsters, oh, the Latino vote, that's bunk. It's a make-believe profession, the pollsters, the bookies, you know, the political bookies. It's a make-believe industry, and it's disgusting, and they engage in the sort of profiling that if I did it as an agent, I would have been in a world of hurt. This, when you can talk about how all Latino voters want a certain objective, all the Jewish voters and the black voters, folks, it's profiling, it's bigotry. Do you think that every Jew votes the same way, every black has the same dreams? It's worse than preposterous. It's damaging, it's insulting, it's humiliating, the Latino voter. The Latino voter wants open borders. Really? Speak to some of the people that I know. I can assure you that there are many people who are of Latino ethnicity who could not be more opposed to illegal immigration and open borders. They resent it. And they resent this notion of the Latino voter, the monolithic voter. It's like saying those people, or black voters, every black is the same, really? Do you see how insidious this is? The motivation has nothing to do with what's good for America or Americans, but this is all self-serving pablum being dished out by a bunch of people who have found a way of profiting by the lunacy that's now going on inside this country. And you have to ask yourself, how do we as Americans tolerate this garbage? We need to be clear on where we stand. And when people start this nonsense and say, oh, you want that border secure, you're anti-immigrant, so here's the point, we're pro-enforcement. And the laws that allow almost a million, or in some cases more than a million new immigrants to come to the United States legally, that's what the word legally means, is pro-enforcement, because it's under those laws that we support that they come here. It's under those laws that they become United States citizens when they naturalize. Immigrant to be pro-enforcement. It's another one of the lies. It's almost as big a lie, or it, actually, I guess it's on par with people like Hillary Clinton, who say, we need wage equality. And I wrote about that for Front Page Magazine. It's the veiled attack on the middle class. We need wage equality. And they always preface it by talking about 10 an hour minimum wage. Well, as a Democrat, I have no problem with raising the minimum wage. I support it. But it has nothing to do with wage equality. It's an absurdity. folks, 10-10 an hour works out $21,000 a year, $21,008 to be precise. And even if you look at the fast food workers who want $15 an hour, you're talking about $31,000 a year. Who does that make you equal to? And for all the ranting and raving and screaming that Hillary Clinton has engaged in, what's remarkable, you know, the way she vilifies the billionaires and the gazillionaires and Bill Gates, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has partnered with the Clinton Foundation in Africa and around the world to make sure that women around the world and girls around the world are treated fairly. How about girls and women in the United States? And while we're at it, how about American men and American boys? You see, this is about globalism. This is about new markets for Gates and all those geniuses in Silicon Valley. And they may know how to make a computer, but they know nothing about ethics. They know nothing about morality. They know nothing about compassion. They will tell you that you lack compassion if you want to protect American lives. That's what they're telling you. Because somehow American lives are expendable. And if you look at the riots that we've seen across the country with the police, St. Louis, wherever, you look at those kids, how many are living in poverty? How many have no opportunities for work or a decent future? So we promised them 15 an hour, maybe, in a fast food joint? Does that bootstrap anybody out of poverty? If you really want to end the madness and you really want to cut down on what's going on with violence, it has to be about providing opportunities to American kids so they know that if they're diligent and they're willing to make the effort, they can be successful. Today, Americans need not apply. Prejudice in our country, by our politicians, if you will, and by our corporations against Americans. There was a civil rights movement to provide equality to American blacks because of slavery. And I'm a very strong believer in the civil rights movement. But somehow we're now being told that this issue of immigration is relating to the civil rights movement. It's another one of those lies that nobody's paying attention to. Illegal aliens are not entitled to civil rights. Civil rights makes you a full participant in a society. And if you are in a society, if you're in a country illegally, you are a trespasser. It's outrageous to then say, I demand my civil rights. Yes, they're entitled to due process. I agree with that for a bunch of reasons. You don't want to make it easier to prosecute an illegal alien because then lazy prosecutors will hang crimes on people that didn't do it, and the bad guys will still be out there, and this certainly isn't justice. But civil rights? And Hillary Clinton has actually said, and I'm paraphrasing her, but I wrote about it recently, incredibly said, that when you talk about somebody being undocumented, it is code for second-class citizenship. Second-class citizenship if you're here illegally? You're not supposed to be here. This is nuts. You see, we are displacing Americans with foreign workers. Americans need not apply. We are now doing as a country to all Americans what had been done to America's minorities in years past. You know, blacks and Jews and so on and so forth need not apply. Well, you know what? Today, the prejudice is against the Americans, and it's by corporations who don't want to pay living wages to American workers, and they've discovered that they can always reach out to some third world hellhole and find people that they can subjugate and exploit and get away with it, and that's what they're doing, and they're aided and abetted by both political parties. Americans need not apply. It's unbelievable. It's unfathomable. And think of how many people mindlessly have been buying these absurd and infuriating arguments, even as more Americans are losing their jobs and losing their homes to foreclosure. And now finally, you're seeing the consequences. The Chinese economy is in the toilet. What nobody understands, don't think of it as them over there, because it's American factories over there that are cranking out products that nobody can afford. So China is in trouble because the American consumer is no longer buying the crap because we don't have the money, you see? We are destroying the middle class, which is the consumer base of the United States of America. And it's the American consumer that is most likely to make the purchases. So you drive the American consumer into poverty, and you rip out the underpinnings of America's middle class and its consumer base, and then where are you? So now the ripples are traveling clear around the world. The damage being done to the middle class is starting to impact China and elsewhere. Mr. Obama do? He's finding more ways to give more illegal aliens employment authorization in the United States. And do you think that that's going to discourage or encourage more illegal immigration? Because once you get here, folks, you're here. You know, I wrote an article, also I believe it was for Front Page Magazine, Immigration Law Enforcement, Why Bother? We spend $13.9 billion a year on customs and border protection, on the Border Patrol, on the inspectors at ports of entry. They have just under 60,000 employees. And I want to know why. I want to know why we are bothering, because if you listen to the politicians from both parties, and you listen especially to Mr. Obama, and you listen to Hillary Clinton, who, by the way, says Obama hasn't gone far enough. I mean, I don't know how much further she wants to go. Is there any place to go further? Why in the world are we bothering to have a legal immigration system when the people who come illegally get all the benefits faster and for free? If you come legally, you have to pay for a lawyer. If you come illegally, comprehensive reform would have provided free legal help. And by the way, guess what, folks? Omnibus bill, the one that bipartisan Congress signed off on, for the first time in history, provides free legal help for illegal aliens facing deportation. It's not in the law, but it's something that Obama wanted, and it's something that the Republicans gave him. But you know what? George W. Bush decided that the privacy laws should apply to illegal aliens. The privacy laws were passed in the 1970s, and they were only supposed to protect United States citizens and lawful immigrants, aliens with green cards. And Michael Chertoff and George W. said, you know what? We ought to give privacy protection to illegal aliens also. You see, this betrayal is landing on us from both political parties. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce wants an unlimited supply of foreign workers who work for lower wages, both at the bottom rung, the illegals who do the manual jobs, and increasingly they're being done by robots, by the way, folks. And the upper jobs, the high-tech workers with the H-1B visa. So they want an unlimited supply of foreign workers. They want to pack the classrooms with more foreign students, and they want ever more foreign tourists to occupy every seat on every airplane, every seat in every ballpark, every theater, every movie house, every restaurant. They want the foreign tourists to sleep in the expensive hotels. They want cheap illegal aliens to change the sheets on the hotel beds. That's what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce wants. And you know what? They're getting it. It's because of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Discover America Partnership that we've expanded the visa waiver program from the 26 countries that participated when the attacks of 9/11 occurred to today, where we have 38 such countries. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is getting exactly what it wants, because it is making massive campaign contributions that I call bribes. I wasn't allowed to take a cup of coffee when I was a federal agent. I got a medal from the government of Japan, a police medal, in recognition for the help I gave them on a narcotics investigation. And before I could take that medal home and keep it, I had to present it to my bosses so they could determine whether the materials it was made out of was worth more than $35. I believe that was the figure. Do you know why? Because if they determined that that medal was perhaps worth $50 or $80 or $100, I couldn't have taken it home. They would have hung it somewhere at headquarters, because that would have been seen as unreasonable, and you can't be swayed by anybody. So it would have been the property of the government. But because they estimated the value at $25, they said, you can take this home. Congratulations. Is anybody saying to the politicians, you can't take more than a $35 contribution for your campaign? The duplicity, the double standard is mind-numbing. I don't even know where to begin with this all. So you have politicians who are doing everything the Chamber of Commerce wants. We're bringing in the refugees, and now we've had a refugee arrested, yet another one, for involvement with ISIS. And the Congress, through the spending bill, provided the money to bring in the refugees that Obama wanted. Even though governors all over the country are up in arms, many governors, not all, there are nitwits out there, California, New York, you know, we've seen this routine. But they're suing the government, but the Congress turns around, both parties, and they voted to give the president the money that he needs to bring in the refugees. Where are we going with this? It's no longer Democrats and Republicans, or as I call them, Democrats and repugnant cans. It's the Republicrats is what I call them. They're on the same side of the argument. Fund the president's programs, but then seek that glorious moment in front of the cameras to thump the podium and complain about it. What do those words mean when you've given the president the money to do what he wants? Understand what kind of duplicitous conduct this is. And this isn't just a matter of, again, as I started out saying at the beginning of my program, folks, this is not simply a matter of a philosophical debate, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. No, we're talking about how many terrorists can dance in the streets of America. And our government is aiding and abetting the efforts of the people who want to kill us. A police officer was shot last night, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, by a guy who said that he owes his allegiance to ISIS. I've yet to find out if this guy was an American who became a radicalized Islamist, or if he came here from another country specifically with this attack in mind. But we saw what happened in California recently. We've seen a succession of attacks. We saw the Boston Marathon, Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomb. We go down the whole litany. And what have we done about it? Nothing. Nothing. And, you know, when Donald Trump came out and said we shouldn't let Muslims into the country, I mean, I'll be honest, I have a problem with it. I don't like a religious test. But I have an alternative. We ought to be ramping up immigration enforcement and having a zero-tolerance policy towards those aliens present in the United States in violation of law who come from the countries that traditionally support terrorism. If you're here from Pakistan and you're one day out of status, you need to be arrested. If you come here from Afghanistan or whatever, pick a country, and you're in violation, you didn't go to your school, we need to find you and deport you. There are thousands of foreign students who've gone missing in America. And remarkably, 6 months to the day after 9/11, it was discovered that two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, were granted authorization to attend flight school in the United States. The whole world knew they were dead. The whole world knew they were terrorists. And we really screwed up. And I was called to testify before that hearing. And if you go to my website, michaelcutler.net, or go to capsweb.org, front page magazine, I routinely write about this lunacy. I was startled. I was one of four witnesses called by the House Judiciary Committee chairman to go and testify how this could possibly have happened. Today, we have over 1 million foreign students in the United States, and we are approaching the point where 500,000 of those students are studying the STEM curriculum, science, technology, engineering, and math. And we're seeing how the terrorists are getting ever more sophisticated. They've obviously been trained. And in the article that I wrote about training the jihadis at universities in the United States, I quoted one of these guys who said that these students were jihadi engineers, learning how to be engineers in America. And he said, this isn't like artwork. We're the guys who could turn off the water, turn off the electricity, paralyze the infrastructure, and they're teaching us how to do it. We are instructing our enemy in the ways to best kill and paralyze us. Is that not an act of insanity? Think of how nuts this is. You know, I keep marveling at how greedy and stupid we are. You know, the communists used to say that the capitalists will sell you the rope with which you will hang them. China sends us more foreign students than any other country who are studying the STEM curriculum. China is our adversary. They're not our ally. They're building up this artificial island in the South China Sea. They just had an airplane land and take off on this artificial island, and they've warned our military to stay away or else. They've developed the capability of shooting down satellites. They're working to build up their nuclear attack submarine fleet. These aren't cruise liners. This isn't like, you know, we're going to go take everybody out for dinner and music on the river. These are military systems with nuclear capability. Where do you think the engineers that are designing these ships got their training? We're teaching our enemy how to kill us. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is ecstatic. And I wrote an article not long ago, and I said, you know, just maybe, I mean, think about it, maybe the U.S. Chamber of Commerce decided they needed to somehow build up the profitability of the funeral homes, because certainly, as we keep doing these dopey things, more and more Americans will pay with their lives. So maybe they're there drumming up business for the funeral homes. How else could you possibly account for this duplicity? How else? This is the beginning of a new year. I'm going to make a suggestion to all of you, and I want to thank you for being here with me today. It's great to be back and speak to you. Please, please, I beg you, I beseech you, make this your New Year's resolution to get involved. So when someone says, oh, you're anti-immigrant, don't walk away, don't shrug your shoulder, don't apologize. No fisticuffs here, folks, but get in that person's face and tell them what you think of them. I mean, really tell them what you think of them. And why don't they give a damn about American kids living below poverty? Because right now, one in four American kids do. Tell them what you think of somebody who doesn't give a damn that their neighbors are losing their homes to foreclosure. Maybe they won't be able to afford to send their kids to college. Not that it much matters, because if you have a college degree but you're not from India, there's not too many people who are going to be interested in you, I suspect. This is a betrayal of the American dream, and it's being perpetrated by our politicians and by corporations. We need to stand up, and we need to make it clear that this is not about being politically correct. This is about being Orwellian. This is newspeak. This is the use of language as a tactical weapon against us and against the United States. And this isn't about being extreme conservative, but it is about being extreme American. Someone said to me, don't you feel bad for the third world? Why would we want to let someone starve in Mexico? And I want you to think about something also. And this is an argument you might want to consider using if you have some nitwitted neighbors who engage you in a discussion about this foolishness. Mexico has, I believe it's the 15th or 16th largest economy on the planet. It is a very successful country. Carlos Slim used to be the wealthiest man in the world. I think he's now down to the third wealthiest. We're going to make a collection for this guy. He's a media mogul. He was born and educated in Mexico. So how could he be so successful living in Mexico, even going to college in Mexico? Because Mexico has the ability to care for its people, but it doesn't want to. Because Mexico has an oligarchy that controls the great majority of the wealth of the country. And you know what's happening, folks? The United States is trying to become Mexico rather than Mexico trying to become the United States. And by having all those Mexican workers in the United States, it's believed that at least 10% of all Mexicans now live in America, the young, able-bodied men who are doing construction work in America should really be storming the gates back home, demanding real change in Mexico so that the average Mexican can live a decent life without having to come to the United States and split up their families. There's no compassion to be found in doing this. We pay people from Mexico scut wages, $8, $9 an hour, $7.50 an hour, whatever it is. Oh, aren't we compassionate? No, we're not. We're being exploitive. And what we're doing at the same time is destroying the wage structure for American workers, American tradesmen, like my dad, who was a plumber. He was a construction worker, a tradesman. And in Mike Cutler's world, tradesmen are certainly no less valuable than some guy with an accounting degree. The guy with the accounting degree gets to push pieces of paper around on his desk and diddles with numbers. My dad and his buddies built stuff. They built the World's Fair. They built John F. Kennedy International Airport. They built apartment houses and factories. They built something in the real world. They didn't cut out little paper dolls and doilies. We need accountants, no argument. We need lawyers. But if you want to talk about can-do, then you're talking about American construction workers and American engineers. You know, the people that built the Panama Canal, the people that sent men to the moon and returned them safely to the earth, the men and women who were behind the X-1 program, the first plane to break the sound barrier, piloted by Chuck Yeager, an American ace. And we're told what Americans can't do, that we need to import the best and brightest. No, folks, I'm tired of the lies. I hope you are. And I hope you will make it your New Year's resolution to engage in those conversations and stand your ground. Don't back down. Don't let anybody insult you or tell you otherwise. This is our country. Those politicians were elected to office to serve us, and they're doing a crappy job for the most part. And the way they came in is the way they can go out, to make them accountable. I want you to please make that your New Year's resolution. And I want you to join what I've come to call my Bucket Brigade of Truth by sharing my articles and any other articles that you find with as many of your friends and neighbors as you can. We're going to win this battle by reminding our politicians which part of the dog is the head and which part of the dog is the tail. There's 535 members of Congress, and there's 320 million of us. I think we got them outnumbered. For your New Year's resolution, your mission, should you decide to accept it, and I hope you will, it's to commit yourself to being the best practitioner of democracy that you know how. Attend the town hall meetings of politicians. Ask the tough questions. Work with your neighbors. Make certain that we convey a clear message to these politicians that we're not as stupid as they hope that we are. That's the work all Americans must do. And I believe that we will succeed if we do that. So that, folks, is what I hope will be your New Year's resolution. I want to thank you so much for joining me today on my program, the Michael Cutler Hour. Please go to my websites, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract. And by the way, the winter edition of The Social Contract will be out shortly. And it will have yet another article that I've written for them. I do a lot of writing for The Social Contract. And again, if you find these articles exciting, interesting, worthwhile, share the links. Let your friends and neighbors know about my program. It's available on podcast. But again, this is all about winning through education and knowledge, because knowledge, in fact, is power. So remember, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. I very much look forward to seeing you again next time right here on the Michael Cutler Hour next week. So long, everybody. Have a great weekend.